This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Well, this is Doug Pollard here, bringing it to you with the assistance of Brett Hayhoe, Clem Newton-Brown, and joining us now, Bianca Johnston. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Doug.
It's been a long time since you've been on a Rainbow Report.
It has been a very long time.
Well, it's good to have you back again. Now, surprising as it may seem, in many cases, there's often a fierce argument about what exactly is a mental illness and what is just somewhat out there behaviour. If you have a disorder, then you can be treated and the pharmaceutical industry can create a drug for you. Otherwise, what are you? Just a nuisance? Anyway, Sydney Block has written a book called Understanding Troubled Minds, and it's all about trying to help us understand what mental illness is. He's the Emeritus Professor in the Department of Psychiatry and the Centre for Health and Society at the University of Melbourne, an honorary psychiatrist at St Vincent's Hospital, and he joins us on the line now. Good afternoon, Sydney.
Oh, hello, Deb.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. Can you explain to us why you wrote this book?
Well, I wrote it because there's a huge amount of confusion in the general public about the nature of mental illness and its treatment. And I've had, I guess, 35 plus years in the field. And today, as much as previous years, I encounter real difficulties and confusion among people who will know everything they need to know about other parts of health, for example, diabetes and so on. But when it comes to something that actually affects their spirits, their mind, their general emotional well-being, they become unstuck. So I'm trying to inform people about the true nature of mental illness and what they can expect from a mental health specialist.
Yeah, and this is where I found reading through the book, this is not a criticism of you, but perhaps of the profession as such.
Yes.
Reading through the book, I found that at certain points in the book, particularly since we are a gay and lesbian radio station, the issues around gender identity and the issue around what are called paraphilias, I found it a little difficult to understand exactly where the line lies between what is a mental illness and what is not, because quite a few of the things around what is normally called gender dysphoria in our community are not considered to be any kind of illness, for example.
Yes, I go along with that. I am myself confused sometimes about what constitutes a mental illness and what does not. For example, until 1973 in the US, homosexuality was regarded as a mental illness. And then, amazingly, they did a poll of American psychiatrists who belong to the American Psychiatric Association, and an overwhelming majority said, no, it's not a mental illness anymore. So within a few months, something that had been regarded as an ailment was no longer an ailment. And this is one of the things that does buffet psychiatry, because we just sometimes, through the changes of values in society, have to, sort out things afresh. Another example would be in the child field, where we have supposedly an epidemic of ADHD, which everybody knows about. But is it truly an epidemic, or are we just calling more and more kids cases of ADHD because it suits the teachers, it suits society, and so on?
Yeah, because it seems to me here to start shading over into something a bit like Soviet psychiatry, where, you know, if you're a bit disruptive in some way, if you don't fit the societal norms, give you a drug and calm you down.
Well, interestingly, one of my first books was on the abuse of Soviet psychiatry. I called it Russia's Political Hospitals, and I looked at that abuse for many years because I was so astounded by the fact that my colleagues in that country, former Soviet Union, could misuse their profession. But I think what we're talking about now is not really the same thing. We genuinely somehow have a different attitude to certain behaviours as we adjust our values or as science determines. A good example, I reckon, is grief.
Uh-huh.
We never ever thought of grief as a mental illness.
Uh-huh.
And grief itself is not a mental illness. You know, we all experience loss, and we all experience the grief that accompanies loss in varying ways, and depends on the cultural group you belong to and the age you are, let you at, and so on. But we now know that morbid or pathological grief is also possible. So somebody who is grieving for their late husband may become extremely and profoundly depressed, and it may, in fact, amount to what we call a major depressive disorder.
So I think Queen Victoria could have told us all about that.
Yes, indeed, that's right. It can be prolonged and extended and never end, as in her case. Or a person might feel extraordinarily guilty that they didn't do enough for their late husband, and the guilt becomes all-encompassing and very burdensome. Anger. They're different. There are about six or seven ways in which grief can become, if you like, not abnormal so much, but maladaptive. So sometimes we in psychiatry develop a problem about what we actually define as abnormal and what is normal, because oftentimes there's a big shade of grey in between. You know, when does grief become very distressing, and where you land up in a dysfunctional place? You can't do things that you used to do, can't enjoy things, and so on.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's been very controversial in recent years has been the whole issue of so-called transgender children coming before the children's court and, you know, being treated with hormone suppressants and so on and so forth. Now, where does that lie on the spectrum we're talking about? Because I notice you say in the book that you're kind of rather careful what you say about it. You don't say that it's necessarily an illness. You just indicate that it might indeed be something people grow out of, or it might be something people actually grow into, almost.
Yeah, I can't give an authoritative answer to that, I must confess, because it's too complex for the likes of us. Mm-hmm. So there's some things that remain suspended because we just don't have the basic knowledge. If I could perhaps move to something like autism, which, you know, mm-hmm. which I think is more clear-cut just for our purposes, mm-hmm. that when autism was first described in about 1941, so 70-odd years ago, it seemed to have this sort of form, and these were the features of it and so on. But very few children were diagnosed as autistic in those days. Mm. In the last 20-odd years, autism has become almost like an epidemic. You hear about autism everywhere.
Yes, variants of it too, Asperger's and so on.
Yeah, so that's right. Two things have happened to make the situation a little different. One is that autism presents in a variety of ways, as do sexual problems that you alluded to earlier. Mm. And so we now have invoked a new thing called autism spectrum disorders. Mm-hmm. Pretty clumsy, clunky term, but it just indicates to us that autism, what we thought was autism in 41, first described then, is not as simple as it was then. It is more complex in having varieties. Sometimes it's with intellectual deficiency, sometimes the language is absent, sometimes the language is much more substantial, and so on and so forth.
If I can just cut in there, this is one of the problems I have with a lot of this. Take another childhood thing, oppositional, defiant, and conduct disorders. I mean, that just sounds like bad behaviour to me.
I was going to ask, what is that? Sorry to cut in, but...
that's behind you there. But isn't this, to some extent, you know, there's always this fight every year over what goes into the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and then all of a sudden when that comes out, there's all these new disorders we never had before, and
it's another
new market for the pharmaceutical companies, isn't it, Bianca? Sorry.
That's the cynical way of putting it, and I think that can't be ignored.
This is
one of the reasons I put out this book, because there are many, many complex questions, and there are also a lot of myths that go around that we can actually clarify, but the questions you pose are just so on the target that I felt it incumbent upon me to try and clarify them.
Sydney, it's Bianca here. I just wanted to know what you think health professionals should be doing to minimise some of the confusion around mental illness when it's, you know, stated in the press that 1 in 10 of us suffer from a mental illness. What can health professionals do?
In terms of trying to reduce the rate and so on?
Well, minimise the confusion about whether behaviours...
Oh, the confusion. I don't know that they can do other than be informed themselves and doctors today, say GPs, have had a training in mental health during the course of their studies, but it's very limited. I mean, at Melbourne University, where I work, it's only 6 weeks, and you can't pick up this whole big subject in 6 weeks. It's just impossible. So GPs themselves, last time I published something of this order about 12 years ago, and fortunately I was able to distribute through some funding 10,000 copies to GPs. And I was delighted when I got feedback saying, oh, at last I can read in a user-friendly way, you know, what we mean by this or that or the other. And they also would give it to patients to read or photocopy a chapter. So basically, I think all of us, health professionals and the lay public, need to be as well-informed as they can possibly be. But bearing in mind the caveat that some of these things are not easily clarified, as we've already mentioned.
Well, yes. I mean, as I said, I have read the book, and it is very, very, I must say, it's very informative, and I like the way that you use a lot of case studies.
Yeah, lots of case studies to try and put flesh on the bone.
Exactly. And that in itself will help, I think, to decrease some of the confusion. And thank you very much for writing it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and I hope it will be useful to the public.
I hope so too.
It's out there in the bookshops.
It is.
It's a commercial plug, and I hope people will avail themselves of the opportunity.
Okay.
Obviously very pleased. Okay.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome. The book is called Understanding Troubled Minds, and it's from Melbourne University Press. And actually, it may sound a bit odd to say it's a good read, but when it's talking about mental illness, but it's actually very simple to read, but not so simple that it's skates over things. You're listening to The Rainbow Report.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.